October meeting of facilities. And first order of business is going to be roll call. We have Supervisor Franco, Gilmore, Grady, O'Day, Wamble. Supervisor Bostrom is possibly coming. I got the good governor myself. We have both. So we are too short. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. I am hoping that everyone received them. We had a chance to go through them. That's the September 11th meeting. If I can get a motion to approve those, or if there's any changes.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gilmore, second by Supervisor Wamble to approve. You, the governor. Committee.
Aye.
The minutes of our previous meeting are approved. I just have a couple comments. I had a chance to meet with the county executive last week on our upcoming budget. If you all remember, our budget meeting is going to be on the 9th, next Monday. And there's still some revisions to be made. Jim Cupford was taking notes throughout the whole meeting, Ray and I and Jim. So we have some exciting projects that we're looking at, but also a very conservative budget that keeps our foot on the gas as far as our improvements for the citizens of Kenosha County. So I'm looking forward to that meeting next Monday. The floor at Brookside was something that was an item that I said at our last county board meeting that we would, at this committee level, take up and look at the concerns that citizens had at that meeting. So I know we have months before we make certain decisions, but Mr. Arvid has some information for us, a PowerPoint at the end of the meeting here in his report, and a representative to go over some of those concerns. So we will be talking about this evening, but definitely the Brookside Board is talking about it and looking at it. No decisions would be made at this meeting. It's just information for us, for all of us, hear what's going on. So that's all I have. Any other committee members? Anything this evening? You, the governor? If not, we'll move on to citizens' comments. If there's any citizens that would wish to address this committee on any matter that pertains to facilities, parks, highways, golf, anything that comes before this committee, you would have 5 minutes to speak. We just ask that you give your name and address for our records, and I'll open up citizens' comments if there are. Anyone wish to speak? Yes, sir.
Bill Zicky, 29920 102nd Street, Treeland. I'm here to speak about a matter that became came before the Salem Village of Salem Lakes Board earlier last week. It has to do with them requesting for the county to put a stop sign by the Colony House, which is JF and Rock Lake Road. You know, the problem with some of these things is that the common citizen who travels up and down these highways really doesn't complain, or they don't get a voice. You know, there's somebody not out there polling, you know, taking, well, you think this is a good idea, you know. It was not unanimous to approve the resolution that they were going to pass. And there was some, I'm objecting to that stop sign. Primarily because it's not needed there. I drive up and down there, maybe through there to Antioch, see my mother maybe a couple times out of the week. And I haven't observed, there's, you know, it's anecdotal, but I think support for the stop signs there was also more or less anecdotal as far as needing a stop sign. We go up and down there, and there's a lot of cars that go, it's almost like a minor regional arterial street going into Antioch there. And you have a lot of cars that are going back and forth there, but they want a stop sign. And I think the one of the main movers was the Colony House owner, Frank Burkhardt, who happens to have a daughter that's on the Samuel Lakes Village Board. And they're kind of championing that kind of a stop sign there. It just seems like it's a bad idea. I mean, you could have a stop sign at Highway C and JF or JF and 83 for maybe some of the same reasons. They're talking about traffic volume and everything. Well, you really don't cut down on traffic volume, or you don't put impediments to traffic volume unless you really need it, or there's some kind of an overwhelming need to put a stop sign there or lower speed limits or something like that. And it just seems like this is just a bad idea, because there's a lot of people that go back and forth in the Indiana from western Kenosha County there, especially in Schriever, Wilmot area there. And things really haven't changed a whole lot in 10, 15 years. There hasn't been a lot of growth, although they say that there's been a lot of growth, but probably in the last 8, 9 years there has been virtually no growth as far as new houses and additional traffic. It just seems like it's a bad idea. We've got too many stop signs sometimes, and I think stop signs end up being sometimes more political and from complaints, whereby maybe adjacent landowners or property owners, they kind of think of the road in front of them as an extension of their driveway or their parking lots. And that's not true. The common person doesn't need more impediments to getting back and forth. I was an industrial engineering at Abbott Labs for 23 years, you try to make things more efficient. You don't slow them down, especially maybe even if there is more a flow, you know, of traffic, in which case I don't think there has been in the last 10 years or so. I had a transcript of part of the meeting. I had to listen to the tape, and I tried to do my best in typing and checking. But this it has to do with Mike Murdoch, who's the Highway Department supervisor there. And he does not, he says that we follow the manual uniform traffic code. And he says it's pretty explicit there that you cannot use stop signs to control speed. He says the current concern they have in regards to the Colony House is enforcement issues versus stop signs. He says unless stop signs are warranted. And he said there was a study done in that area there several years ago where not only were stop signs not needed, but the speed on Rock Lake Road, which is 25 miles an hour, should be at 35 miles an hour, and that's what the study does. And he said you never want to really, people don't want to renege on speed, you know, and speed limits and everything, although it's been done, you know, and I've seen it more done, like on 94 and going into Milwaukee. But he thinks that that it's a bad idea, and that I got the sense that he did not like too many stop signs like that. We've got complaints from neighbors who want stop signs all the time just to slow down traffic, and it's not right. And I don't think it's right to the other the drivers, especially that particular stop sign. So I've got the transcripts of Mike Murdoch's comments here. I didn't make enough here. I've only got like 5. I don't know who's that committee member here. Okay.
Mr. Eller, one more.
We can share. Yeah, we can make some copies.
Yeah. But anyway, those are important because Mike is the Highway Department supervisor there. And there was another traffic request for signs made at the same meeting for in a subdivision or something, and it was like for another 2 or 3 stop signs. And he said, well, maybe one is warranted, but the other, like, 2 are not, you know. And it seems like there's always that the local government is very sensitive to complaints, but whether or not traffic controls are really necessary, I would really ask you to scrutinize this kind of a request here and tell them no if it really isn't warranted. Maybe there needs to be a new study down there or something. I'm not sure. You're also complaining maybe about a part of the bike path being there, but the bike path is farther down on Rock Lake Road there, where you have the pit haven and everything. And I haven't seen any bikes in that area there at all, as far as right at that intersection there. And I haven't seen any intersections in the last 30 years that I've been there. But that's anecdotal, and I'm sure you've got studies, you know, concerning accidents and intersections and stuff. But I'd like you to really scrutinize this and consider it. But consider also just the common person driving on the road that doesn't want to show up at a meeting like this, but when he sees a stop sign, he's going to say, what the heck is going on here? So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. No, just briefly, no changes like this are made without a study. So there is definitely a set of warrants that have to be met. Our highway commission would bring that to the committee, so nothing has been done. Nothing will be approved until that's done. Any other citizens wish to speak? Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to comment about...
I need your name and address.
Oh, okay. Sally Gustavly, 8909, and that would be 53142. Cooper Road. This is about Brookside again, and yes, I have, we are also, and I'm speaking for the group, are very concerned about the carpeting, and we understand that, well, you know, this will be addressed later, but it's just a bad situation for staff and for the residents. It's making life very difficult for everybody. And but my concern tonight, because I'm just going to take one issue at a time, is that the bathrooms, now I need to back up and give you some background about what's happened at Brookside. They have built a new facility, and they have taken the residents from the old facility because they're renovating it, and they put them all into the new facility. Okay. The new facility was really built for people that don't need a lot of care and maintenance. My concern is that the bathrooms are not, primarily the sinks, are not wheelchair accessible. If anybody here would like to take an hour out of their day and just go to Brookside and just look at any of the residents or talk to any of them, you can see that they cannot reach the sink. And these are people that have already had a lot of their dignity taken from them, okay? And they now can't wash their face, they cannot brush their teeth, they can't spit into the bowl, they can't wash their hands because they can't reach it. It's much too high. Now, I know nothing can be done at this point. All we want to know is this situation going to continue to exist in the renovated section? Are the sinks going to be too high in the renovated section? And it's been 5 months of trying to get an answer to that and to bring this concern forward. It's been very difficult to bring any concerns forward. We tried going the direction of the trustees, and that was ignored. Every concern ignored. And that's the path they're supposed to take, and that's what we were told. But each time, everything just seems to be swept under the carpet, ignored, or stifled. So now, this is a facilities committee. Toilets are facilities. We're hoping that we can get an answer. Is this going to be the same in the renovated section? Also, it requires, really, if you're crippled and you're in a wheelchair, 2 support bars at the toilet. According to state law and code, now Wisconsin only needs 1 bar at the toilet. I just want you to try to imagine being crippled and trying to go to the toilet when there's only 1 sidebar. I don't think it would cost much more money to have another sidebar put in. And so I'm hoping that there will be 2 sidebars in the new renovated area. I'm hoping somebody can tell me if that is going to happen. So that's my primary concern. Then I have a small concern, and that is in the enclosed garden area. There's a little area that's surrounded by 4 walls. And in that area, there is no shade. And it's as though no one thought about that. And it's too late now because it's taken 5 months to finally address that issue. But if somebody could plant a tree just for future residents, it might be you that's there at Brookside. It would be nice to have a tree so that there would be some shade, just a little bit of shade. I mean, they don't have much to enjoy in life, and they love going out listening to the birds and so forth. And if I had hoped that if a tree in the meantime, you could put a tent up, just a tent. And so I just hope that these two things could be addressed. And I'd like to thank you for taking up your time.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak on our citizens' comments? Supervisor Dodge?
Yes, Rick Dodge, 2602 33rd Street. I come to speak on Brookside. I didn't know you were going to be given a presentation at the end of the meeting, and that this was for information only. I think you said this was up to the committees at Brookside. I don't know if the committee at Brookside has the authority, the trustees, to enact a change in the carpeting, a budget change. I don't know if they have the ability to do that. But I come here and I've kind of watched what's going on at Brookside for many years. My wife retired from there with 40 years. And beautiful facility. I remember the budget we got, and Fran does a great job. I mean, she had to keep within budget. I don't know if this is why we got the carpeting or not, because I know going in we had problems with the foundation. We had attic expenses come in. And I don't know if that's why we're going with carpeting rather than tile floors. But my wife asked me to come and say something on behalf of the residents. And if you're going to have a facility like Brookside for a long time and you want to enjoy it, you want to spend a little extra to make it good. I mean, it's the best nursing home in Kenosha. So I really would like to see the budget. If we need a budget increase, to increase the budget and do it right. I know I've gone to most of the trustee meetings. It's in my district, so I follow it. I know that in a nursing home, you have a lot of people that have incontinence and make messes, and it's hard to clean carpeting rather than, you know, if you've got nice tile floors. I know my father was in Washington Manor, and they had carpeting in there, and they'd had it for a while, and it was bad. I mean, it looked bad. It even smelled bad. I don't care what they did, it still smelled bad. So I would like to see, if necessary, if Fran needs the additional money to do it right, I would like to see the county board and whomever, your committee, approve that. And Ray, I'm going to look forward to hearing your presentation, but I just had to come in and let you know. I think it's something we should do right. My wife just bought a new Buick today. And of course, she wanted to hold on the cost. I says, you know, there's some things that you're going to pay a little extra for up front, but you're going to enjoy for a long time. So we got her a nice car, you know, because it's worth paying a little extra to get those better things, and I think Brookside deserves it. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Dash. So the reason we are looking into this evening, as I said, nothing is going to occur because it's a long-term decision, as you said. But the flooring at Brookside that was chosen, it's not a budgetary problem. It was chosen on the major recommendations of professionals, and it's certainly no money was trying to be saved on it. That I can guarantee you before we go any further. But, as I said earlier, things can be changed, and we have plenty of time to do it, but we're listening to recommendations, and as we're going to begin that tonight. Any other citizens wish to speak? If not, citizens' comments are closed, and we will move on to division reports. And number one is highways, is Stephen Clemens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The county, of course, is taking advantage of the good weather to accomplish a substantial amount of asphalt paving on county highways. The workforce has completed about 10.7 miles of asphalt paving so far this year. County Trunk Highway B from Highway 50 to Highway C and County Trunk Highway SA from Highway 83 to County Trunk Highway 8H were completed, have been completed. The epoxy pavement marking will be done this week. We are also doing concrete repair work on Highway 50 from Highway K. We are doing concrete repair work on Highway 31 from Highway K to Highway 50. This work is for the state. We're doing it on a contract basis, and we are anticipating to complete this work by the end of October. And the general maintenance work by mowing, brushing, and shoulding at various locations in the county is also going on. We are also going to be doing some auxiliary work in the Brightondale Cove, of course, and we're doing some crack sealing, rectifying spring in North Shoehouse Trail. We are also getting ready to start setting up the trucks and all the equipment in preparation for the winter maintenance season, and we're planning to start that by mid-October. Regarding projects that are ongoing project, County Trunk Highway S, the county is still waiting for feedback on the RPZ analysis from the FAA. The county will be able to finalize a way forward based on feedback from FAA. The design consultant, however, is continuing with the design and the environmental engineering on other sections of the project to keep it on schedule. The next project is County Trunk Highway H, Bain Station Roundabout. There has been some significant progress despite the delay caused by utility relocations. The contractor has completed major grading work and they're staking for the concrete work this week. The project is approximately 3 weeks behind schedule. We are targeting completion in the spring of 2018. County Trunk Highway W Curve in Wheatland. The project is substantially completed. The road is open. And the contractor will be doing finishing grading, landscaping, storm sewer work, and some punch list items. Next project is County Trunk Highway JF from 259th Avenue to State Trunk Highway 83 in Salem Lake. This project is under contract. The contractor has been delayed due to some challenges to get flaggers from the railroad. But we get feedback that the flaggers will be coming in this Friday, so work will continue this Friday. Most of the main line of the road has been paved, just shouldering work and 25-foot sections on both sides of the track that are still to be done. We are anticipating that this project, if the flaggers come in on Friday, we are anticipating that this project will be completed by mid-October. And then the next project that is going to be starting very soon is the Pike River Trail project along Highway 31 from County Trunk Highway A to Highway KR. This is a joint funded project, Kenosha and the federal government, and this is funded through the congestion mitigation and air quality improvement grant, popularly known as CIMAC. This project will construct a multi-use trail to assist in the connecting the existing trail in Petrifying Spring and a planned trail in Mount Pleasant. Mobilization for this project is expected this week. Construction is scheduled to start in mid-October. As part of this project, WISDOT required, or that WISDOT at Wisconsin Department of Transportation required that the county to extend the trail on the south side of County Trunk Highway KR from the southwest corner of 31, Highway 31 and KR intersection, and extend it to 56th Avenue. This section of the trail will complete the linkage with Mount Pleasant planned. Mount Pleasant still has to construct the trail next year, so it will connect that trail with Pike River Trail. There's only one Wisconsin Department of Transportation project, and that is State Trunk Highway 45 in Bristol. Concrete paving on the traveling lanes from 86th Avenue to State Trunk Highway 50 is completed. A contractor plans to complete asphalt paving from County Trunk Highway C to 86th Avenue this week. The project is scheduled to be completed by mid-November. Generally, that's just the update on all the projects that we have. That's all I have for tonight.
Thank you, Colin. Does anyone have Doris Webb?
The trail, the Pike River Trail connecting to Mount Pleasant, do you know how long the trail will be when it's connected, the entirety of it?
The entirety of about 1.3 miles.
That's our section.
What about the whole thing, even in Racine County? How long, do you know how long it will be
once it's... Racine County, I don't know how long the Racine County will be. However, it's still under design right now, so it'll be a little bit premature to say how long.
I was just curious. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, the 1.3, actually, the main core of the CMAC project is actually 1 mile. That is the one that runs along the east side of Highway 31. Now, there is also a 0.3 mile from the intersection of KR and 31 that we are taking to 56, which was required by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, because that will provide a connecting point for Mount Pleasant when they bring down the trail. So the total would be 1.3.
Thank you.
Just to follow up, anticipated beginning this month in October, will it be completed anticipated this construction season, or will it be carried over to next year?
Anticipation completion date will be next year in spring.
And then just the last follow-up question, are there any paving projects that we are not going to get to this construction season that we had slated or planned for paving?
Right now, there's just one segment that is pending. I don't want to say we'll not get to it, but if we can't get to it, it will be FR.
Okay.
And that will be the first road we pave next year, if we don't get to it this year.
Very well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
We lost some paving time due to the flooding, about 3 weeks and numerous manholes. So if we, some of this may go in the next season. Any other questions for Clement? No, thank you, Clement. We will move on to the Parks Division. Matt Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to pass along some pictures from some of our special events we had this last month. It's been extremely busy, but lots and lots of attendees in our parks in the month of September. Those pictures are for our fall wheel ride, Pike River Run that we had this last weekend, our Oktoberfest beer garden that had several hundred people attend that one, Silver Lake, Wisconsin, Endurance Mountain Bike Series, and then the Pringle Family Fall Fun Fest. So on top of that, as part of my report, we also hosted the Pike River Cleanup in conjunction with the Kenosha Sports Fishing and Conservation Association, and that was over at Petrified Springs Park, where they actually completed a lot of sections within the entire Pike River. And as my report says, it collected over 25 tires and two full dumpsters full of garbage. So it's kind of disheartening when you look at those pictures that are attached on the report as well. That's typically what they get every year, and it's sad that they keep on collecting over and over again people's garbage. But we truly appreciate all those volunteers that help collect all that garbage. Next, we have the Silver Lake Fox River roof replacement projects. We're well on our way with that project. The chimney repairs are completed, and we're looking at actually replacing both roofs in this month in October. Next, we had our Fox River Volunteer Day. We had over 100 volunteers assist at Fox River Park from the Wilmot Ski Mountain, and they were outstanding, and they were an amazing partner of our parks. And you can see on the list of everything they were able to accomplish within a 4-hour period, but 400 volunteer hours. They came to work that day. It wasn't just basically pulling a couple weeds here and there. There is some really diehards out there that really were passionate about helping the park. So they were able to replace and paint 20 picnic tables, numerous improvements on our overnight lodge, 10 tons of crushed gravel they pushed around, constructed a new staircase on our disc golf course, added 2 tons of topsoil, seed and straw along our road shoulder, brushed and landscaped a new our historic picnic site, lopped brush along our hiking trails and disc golf course, and then, of course, picked up a little bit of the litter around the disc golf course, too. So, great partnership, and they loved us so much, and we had plenty of quality projects that they want to come back on an annual basis and help us out. So, great partnership on that one. Just an update on the Kemper Center. There was a Fix-It article several months ago asking what to do with that debris pile that's between the Anderson Arts Center and the Kemper Center. And we're working with Terracon and having that debris pile tested to see if there's any contaminants within it. And that will give us an insight of how to better handle that debris pile to get that removed. So that'll be happening on the 17th of this month. And then hopefully I'll have an update as far as it's contaminated or not, what we're planning on doing with that debris over on the shoreline. You can see the upcoming events. Things still are not slowing down. Lots of runs, walks, and bike rides. And that is all I have for my report.
Question, thank you. The debris pile?
Yes.
Can you just give an overview? What is it? What's in there?
So the history, as far as what I understand, is every year, winter going into spring, Kemper Center has these northeastern windstorms that push a lot of this debris onto our shoreline. A majority of that pile was left from those storms and accumulated over time. But unfortunately, once you put a pile, especially in the city, what happens is it gets commingled, let's call it, with other people's debris. And that's where our concern comes into play is, if over a period of time, if there was contaminants that were illegally dumped there, we don't want to repurpose that for another park or highway project without truly filtering through there. We're hoping that we can repurpose. We would extremely lower that cost, but we can't move forward until we sift through that debris.
The reference to vandalism?
Oh, yes. I skipped that one, but yeah, so we did have some vandalism. Some kids threw some rocks and also black walnuts, believe it or not, into the windows, and they broke the 7 windows at Kemper and 6 windows at Anderson Arts Center.
Will insurance cover that, or is it?
No, we had the price quote come back, and it's around $2,000 in repair costs, and our deductible is at $5,000. So the county's going to have to pay.
Were the kids caught? Were law enforcement involved?
Law enforcement was involved. Police reports were made, unfortunately. Nothing was done.
Nothing. Okay.
No witnesses.
I don't know if it's the time to bring this up, but Kemper Center is having their annual haunted house coming up. Okay. And the Concerned Citizens Coalition's Team Task Force is helping with that. So if everyone is interested in haunted houses, spread the word. It's October 13th and 14th, 20th, 21st, and 27th, 28th. It's Fridays and Saturday nights from like 6 or 7 until about 10. So it's a good way to help not only Kemper, but the team task force as well, because they're volunteering their time. So I just throw that out there. Thank you.
Anything else from Matt?
On the social Kemper, we've been advised in past meetings that there would be renovation of certain spaces, certain areas to be used for various artistic endeavors or small, very small space, workspace. What is the status with that? Where are we today with that?
We're still working with Kemper Center that we have to still review plans and be a little bit more intimate as far as where the money's coming from. They're doing fundraising efforts, but nothing's happening until we can really review that with the Kemper Center board, Gary Gronke. And then before we actually start construction, we would obviously bring it to the Public Works Committee for informational purposes.
So just in terms of their organization and so forth, do you have an idea, is that going to be coming this year?
Yeah. We were hoping to have it for tonight, but it just wasn't quite up to prime time yet. So
we had some constituents ask what the progress is, and I'm just kind of curious. I don't know what you report back.
We hope to have it no later than next month for the regular committee.
So that may be an agenda item, actually.
Yes, it will be an agenda item when it's done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It will be an agenda item. Matt and Ray have to be more diplomatic than I have to be. Their presentation to the county executive and what the county executive shared with me was not good enough yet. So to protect the county, to make sure that we have final say in everything, they had to go back to the drawing board. So that's why it's not here. I like the way you guys say it. Anything else for Matt? If not, we're going to move on. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the golf division on the golf course, we've started the blue spruce aerification today, but all the rest of the golf holes, the greens, have all been aerified. So all of Petrifying Springs, including their putting green and their chipping green, have been done. All of the white birch, all of the red pines have all of the aerification done. Aerification is necessary because of all the compaction on the greens, especially. That's where people congregate, and so we usually aerify the greens, the tees, the approaches, and it is kind of invasive. I mean, you're taking a core, maybe as big as my pinky, out, and you want to remove that earth and then refill it with sand, so it's a little bit less compacted, and let the air and the water get down to the roots of the rest of the grass. So you know, I was very pleased this year that we got very few complaints. I mean, people were playing, you know, at both facilities, you know, relatively quickly afterwards, and through good practices and knowing how to do the aerification process, you know, they're getting it pretty smooth, and they're getting the greens cut within a couple days, and it's really going over well without many people being upset about the aerification process, because it is a necessary thing. Our next big incentive will be Friday, October 6th. We're going to have the senior scramble, and then we've got a 27-hole Brightondale Open, which will be Saturday, October 14th, and we will be awarding 2018 season passes for the winners of those events. So the senior scramble will be a senior pass, and then the Brightondale Open will be an adult pass. So we usually fill those up. We're doing very good. I think we have over 100 in both of them already. So those are always good. And then the last weekend is just October is just a fun event. We have crazy different events on there where you have to play a hole with your putter, or the whole hole with your driver, or there's pumpkins in the way of the hole and you got to putt around them, and just crazy stuff like that. And that's going to be the Halloween Horrors, both October 28th and 29th. And really, with these events that we have upcoming, all created by our staff, is we're going to hopefully have a good wrap-up, you know, month this month in October, and we'll be open, you know, as long as the weather permits. I think in 15 we were golfing on December 26th at Petrifying Springs yet, so we'll be open as long as we can. The Kenosha County Executive Cup went really well Tuesday, September 12th. It was the biggest field that we ever had. We had 142 players, which was a great participation rate, filled up the field. We had great sponsors. We feel that we've made over $12,000 for our junior golf programs at both Petrifying Springs and Brightondale. So it's really a boost to our operations of contributing to the kids and their knowledge of the game, and keep growing the game in Kenosha County. So it was great to see everybody having a good time that day. Projects we're working on, the wastewater treatment plant maintenance road, and there's a road from the clubhouse down to the maintenance shop. That we're going to start paving actually tomorrow. We had a pulverizer come out and pulverize whatever mess was left there. It was really, really badly broken up, and now we're going to have the paving done tomorrow. At Petrifying Springs, we paved behind the clubhouse, and it looks just tremendous. We took out some railings, we took out some planters, and everything just flows so much better. It's just a nice slope from the concrete walk right next to the building down to the end of the cart staging area, and it really, really dressed up that area, got rid of all that broken pavement. Looks great, and you know, I just want to thank Clement and his crew for their work that they're doing and going to be doing tomorrow out at Brightondale. I'm really excited about that. We slit seeded all the turf at Brightondale that was damaged by the flood, and now with the drought that we've had the last couple weeks, we've been putting a lot of water on it, but you know, it's coming in well. Wherever the water can reach, so it's good to see how it's regenerating. And then the 9 bunkers that we removed at Brightondale, the grass is coming in very well. It's still grass depressions, it's still a playing feature, and I think people are really going to enjoy it, but it's going to be a lot less maintenance in those areas. So right now we're going to look for more areas that we can do that to. You know, we want to try and start removing a couple more bunkers. We had 137 bunkers. We would like to get down to about 92, you know, about two a hole, and we feel that that would be a good mix for the golf course, and so we're still looking for more bunkers to remove, and we've went over this with the Lohman Group, who is our golf course architect, who has the master plan for Brightondale, so we have a pretty good plan on where we're going to do that.
Any questions for Dan? No.
Just a comment, the signs at Pipeline Springs, the rejuvenated T signs look so much nicer. It's really a nice touch, and it befits the course, and it all kind of looks like it's spruced up.
Thank you, and we will be doing that next year at Brightondale.
Nothing else, we'll move on. Dan? Mike, facilities, operations.
Starting with the focus on energy project list, one project to report on, that's the one at KCC here, which is upgrading the exterior lights to LEDs. That was completed as of Friday. You'll notice on the sheet that one thing that was changed was the potential incentive amount. It went up to $58.90 from $27.15. We had a guy go on vacation, and he took 2 months off, and his replacement didn't calculate it accurately, so I had the figures redone because they looked odd, and it more than doubled. So that was a big help with that project. It was a $66,000 project. We got an incentive just under $6,000. That's the only one on this list. As far as ongoing projects, two to report on. The fire system replacement at this building is complete, except for some trim around the panel. And then the Molinaro boiler replacement projects go along fine, and anticipated completion date is the 20th of October. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? That was going a lot of confusion.
It's getting there.
Very good.
It's getting there.
Projects?
Yes. Frank here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Otherwise, I could do it. But.
Sorry, I was just finishing up some work. I've set fire alarm system replacement, withholding the $70,000 from Simplex got somebody's attention in accounting. And when they called for the invoice, I said we'd be happy to pay it as soon as they finish the punch list. And amazingly, they got people queued up and raring to go. So we had people on site today. They're doing the as-builds. They should have things wrapped up, we estimate, in about a week. So not paying them really got their attention. No questions on that. Go to public safety building generator project. It looks like we're going to finish up the testing. They didn't find a smoking gun, but they addressed the things that they thought might have caused anything like this. We've got 2-year warranty on this, parts and labor, and we're going to do the exact same load testing and then start up the next day where we had this problem. So between our electrical engineer, Caterpillar, I think they've done everything they can so far.
And I want to just add a little bit to that, Frank. So Frank and I have talked about this extensively because the critical nature of this, all the generators are critical, but this one is at the public safety building. It does all of our IT. It's going to do all of our IT systems and a significant chunk of law enforcement related stuff. So what we found is that without getting too publicly involved in dissing Caterpillar, when we had a forensic engineer come in to do their investigation, Caterpillar had already gone in and done some adjustments of things. So when our forensic engineer came in to check things out, they already had, I think, detected some of what the issue was, and it was on their side of the equation. So they addressed it. The bottom line is Frank worked extensively, and they put together probably the most extensive commissioning process that has ever been used for a generator by Caterpillar, for sure in the state of Wisconsin, maybe in their entire portfolio. And that's going to, I think they're scheduled to do that this week, Wednesday and Thursday.
Correct.
So we want to make sure, because right now we've got a backup to this generator,
right.
And before we pull that thing and out, we want to make sure this thing is going to do what it's supposed to do. So I just wanted to add that for some additional.
Also, this, we have the generator set up to be tested every week. So we're hoping we took care of the issue, but if not, it's tested weekly. So if something were to pop up, we should see it well before. Any other questions? Public safety building, second addition, second floor project. The fleet maintenance building roof is on tight, weatherproofed, and the concrete floor has all been poured, except the little section we left open where we have a stairwell coming down. But really, it's looking very good inside. HVAC is going in. We're looking pretty good. We've got the natural gas all hooked up. We have the electrical primary coming in. The transformer from We Energies was set. We're looking pretty good on that. We're still targeting about November 15th for building completion. There's a few pieces of equipment that they've ordered for the shop. We'll have to see about their delivery, but we're looking pretty good on that building. As for the PSB second floor activities, all the drywall is up. The build out of the all the plumbing, it's really coming together. Before, you could see through the whole second floor because it was just studs. Now it's all drywall and it's starting to look like a real work area. We're targeting the EOC electronic audio visual for that to commence being put in at end of October. We want to finish that just about Thanksgiving time. So that'll be a major piece of the puzzle. So far so good for that. No other questions then. Courtroom, Branch 4 remodel. This is the first kind of real extensive remodel we've done, so you know, as the judges and different people look at this, some things have popped up. They're looking at things for the future, electronics. So we're going to sit down and finalize the design this Wednesday with the architect, but everything is still ready to go on October 16th. And we're looking for a year-end completion. That was it.
That's it for Frank. Thank you very much, Frank. We'll move on to Mr. Carmel. Under Mr. Harvard's briefing.
Good evening, Supervisors. You may recall a couple months ago we had a special meeting before the county board meeting in order to quote-unquote memorialize County Trunk Highway N as a county trunk highway that had been worked for a minimum of 50 years, whatever was the city limit. That was, as I told you then, the precursor to what we're doing tonight. After many months of work between various municipalities and attorneys for the same, what has been colloquially referred to as a master agreement has been in the final stages of improvement. It is the successor to a number of agreements, including an agreement that the county entered into with the city and Paris in 2014, which was primarily related to U-line development, but from the county standpoint, the primary interest was the transfer of a portion of County Trunk Highway N from the county to the city. As this is a successor to that agreement, that same language is in this sort of massive agreement between the various parties. And I'm asking this evening for committee's approval, and then tomorrow night the board's approval for that intergovernmental agreement, which, again, the only two aspects to the agreement that impact the county are the approval of that transfer of the stretch of County Trunk Highway N from the interstate west to 128th Avenue, as well as permission to dismiss a lawsuit that we didn't want to be a part of in the first place.
So as I've said numerous times over the years, and a couple of times to this committee, whenever we can do this, I've been always told by our highway commissioner, please do it, because it is money not spent by Kenosha County that maintaining this road, plowing this road, and it is turning over to the municipality that's going to develop the area. So we've done this many, many times. This is very common and a big advantage to Kenosha County if we approve this this evening. Yes?
On the section that we're talking about here, do we have to put curb and gutter in for the city? Is that part of the transaction too?
It's already done.
Yeah, it's already in. We would be washing our hands of it completely.
So all we need is a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gray, second by Supervisor Gilmore. Any discussion? If not, you the governor?
Aye.
And committee?
Aye. Aye.
So the resolution is carried. Thank you, Mr. Cardamon. All right, you're ready.
So I figured, Mr. Chairman, we'd start with addressing some of the issues that were brought up at the county board relative to carpeting at Brookside Care Center. But I wanted to say a couple of comments before I introduce the gentleman to my left. Just as we've talked before in the committee, but there's a number of folks from the community here tonight, this whole project was done using an evidence-based design type process. The gentleman that worked at Abbott Labs is familiar with exactly what I'm talking about. I'm sure there's other folks that worked in situations where things were process-driven. This is a very process-driven operation. Everything that went into looking at what the floor coverings were, what type of windows were put in the building, what type of HVAC controls, everything was done in kind of a lean manufacturing kind of approach to things. There was always an analysis done to see what it brought to the table in terms of, number one, creature comfort or resident comfort in this case, in terms of the facility itself, and two, then from an efficiency standpoint, how well it would function long term in the building for the purpose and how much it would take to maintain it. So that was kind of the whole approach. It was a very, I think, fairly scientific approach for a county project. Mr. Andrew Alden, he was the lead architect, design architect. Fran's here tonight as well, and she can speak certainly to some of the design goals of the project that were set out at the outset. It is not your father's nursing home. It is completely designed to state-of-the-art standards, both from an aesthetic standpoint as well as a technical standpoint. As one of the speakers said earlier in the conversation or under citizens' comments, the building right now, the areas that are being used to house all of the skilled nursing, the full population and the range of folks is being housed in space that is long-term designed for folks that want to live in a community-based residential facility or in a rehab facility for folks that are in either long-term rehab or short-term rehab. They're in that type of environment. The skilled nursing facility will be the part that's under renovation right now, the old part of the building, but it will be renovated. Now, there's parts of the building that are going to be renovated, and you are not going to recognize them. When you walk into the building, it is going to be radically changed. Those are primarily the hubs and the common areas of buildings. The resident rooms, there really was fairly minor refreshes that were done in there. To the question she had about the bathrooms aren't being changed at all in the old Brookside. The existing commodes, the existing sinks and so forth are again all designed to accommodate that type of skilled nursing, SNF type resident, and that's what those are all being maintained. But there is new flooring, there's wallpaper that's been removed in those rooms. The rooms have gotten a refresh, so they just look at least brighter, cleaner, and updated. But that's the extent of what's taking place in the rooms. I do want to be clear, because of the master schedule for the project, because the goal is to get all these folks that have been double bunked for the past 8 months back into their appropriate spaces for their care needs, we have not slowed down the project. So the project has been progressing to the point where there is actually flooring being installed. It started like in the last week or so. So it is in process, because if we were to hold back on that at this point, it will impact our ability to complete the project. We're still planning to get everybody back in by mid-March, is kind of the target that we set. So I just want to be clear about that. It's not completed, but that work is taking place as we speak. I think, though, after I have Andrew walk us through a PowerPoint and some of the key points, you'll understand some of the science behind the floor covering, both from an aesthetic standpoint and resident comfort standpoint, as well as the maintenance standpoint, and clearly the safety issues that have been raised. So with that, Mr. Andrew Alden, I'll turn it over to you from Epstein Union Architects.
So I told Ray, I said, Ray, I got a great 2-hour presentation for you. I said, we're going to go into in-depth into safety, aesthetics, thermal comfort, auditory. He stopped me before I could get to my fifth point. He said, how about like 5 minutes? I said, okay. So we boiled it down to about 10 slides. So let's go right ahead. Go right ahead. I'll give you the power. So thinking about contemporary senior living environments, we're really thinking about safety. We're thinking about safety from both the residents, the staff, and the family members' point of view, about accommodating abilities, right? We're thinking about comfort, a healthful and aesthetically pleasing environment. When we say aesthetically pleasing, it's home-like, but parts of it may be more hospitality-based. So you got a little bit of hospitality, you got a little bit of home-like. Ray mentioned evidence-based design. What does that really mean? That means that the design team looked at precedent, what other people have done, what the results were, what the studies show. The Brookside staff visited other communities, learned about their floor finishes, what works for them, what didn't work for them. And we really tried to make sure that everybody understood what the choices mean, right? So what that aesthetic choice is going to result in. So senior living environments nowadays are really looking more at smaller scale environments, keeping less residents together, providing lots of common spaces, decentralizing staff, looking at natural light, improving airflow, and that home-like piece comes up many, many times. There's some hospitality components in the bistro and the dining area, but really pushing that feeling, that aesthetic feeling that you're at home when you're at Brookside. One of the things we can talk about first is falls. Fran had provided some information that basically says that since the residents have moved into the new building, there have been less falls, and there have been zero falls that resulted in surgery. Is that correct, Fran?
Major injury,
which may have resulted in surgery. So overall, falls are down, and we can attribute that to higher slip resistance of carpeting. We can attribute that to more texture, more feel. If it gets wet, it's not slippy, things of that nature. So when you're thinking about picking a flooring material, specifically carpet, you're thinking about safety, right, slip resistance. You're thinking about ergonomics, that walking around all day is what the impact is on your body, especially older bodies. Infection control, acoustics. If you're in a room with carpeting, it's much easier to have a conversation than if you're in a hard room with all hard surfaces around you. Indoor air quality, carpeting, especially if it's on a regular vacuuming schedule, provides cleaner air. There's a little bit of a misconception that a hard floor is a cleaner floor. The reality of it is that a hard floor results in a higher particulate level because stuff just moves around. All those fine particulates move higher, and a carpet will help contain that. And if it's on a regularly scheduled vacuuming, it's not an issue. It actually provides a healthier, cleaner environment. And maintenance. Fran's staff was very careful on talking to other communities that have carpet, talking to them about how they maintain, what equipment they use, and then getting the right equipment from this manufacturer, the right supplies, and the right training in order to maintain and care for this carpet. So we'll get into there's our fancy three-dimensional view of what that carpet actually looks like. And a couple of the really big things about this carpet is it has a thermoplastic compound, which is basically a non-permeous membrane, right? So if you have this carpet down, liquids can't seep through it. So use an extraction machine and you can pull those liquids out. That's really important. This is not the carpet that you would have in your house. This is a high durability carpet that you wouldn't have in your house because of this backing that's on it. It's made specifically for these environments: acute care, hospitals, and senior living communities. The membrane.
I want to add just a little something as this is going around here, Andrew. So what that shows is a couple of things, actually. It has a sample of the actual carpet that's installed in the resident rooms. If you notice, it's not even a quarter of an inch. I'd say it's probably 3/16 thick. It has low rolling resistance. Is it as nice as rolling on the resilient flooring that's in the bathroom? That's what that other material is on there. It's a resilient flooring. And then what's shown in between there is the new transition strips that we just came up with, which will allow, because that's one of the complaints in the area that we've constructed, the new construction, is that the transition between the bathroom and the carpeted area, the living space, the transition strip is a little clunky and it's difficult to navigate. This transition strip will eliminate. We've done some testing on it and we've already determined that this is what we're putting in the renovated area, and then we're going to go back and replace in the new area with that same transition strip. So it's showing a couple of things there. I want to clarify one thing. I had mentioned antimicrobial films being a part of this process. Now, when we started doing our carpet research originally on this, because we had multiple meetings with multiple carpet manufacturers, so we understood everything. Because this is a big change. A lot of people are against it. There was the nursing homes 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 15, 20 years ago that had carpeting that was a complete disaster because it was this same carpeting that we've got in here. This is not that. This is a very high-performance carpet designed specifically. It's basically a bathtub. There's two impermeable layers, and the concept is Kaiser Permanente, kind of the who's who of healthcare, they actually had done case studies and determined that the benefits that antimicrobials brought to the table when you put them in carpet were actually worse. The benefits were less than the dangers posed by them. So they actually did away with antimicrobials, and I didn't realize that when we selected this carpet, this is the next generation. This is the most state-of-the-art carpet you can get for healthcare facilities. There's no antimicrobials in it. The reason that's designed that way, it's designed in a preventive way. There's no liquid that can permeate that. And then what are the three things the microbes need to?
Food, moisture, temperature. So you break the chain with a nylon yard, so there's no food for the microbes.
So it's basically designed, as long as you follow the cleaning processes and protocols, which Fran's staff has, we've had people from the National Carpet Institute out, as well as the original equipment manufacturer, the folks that manufactured the carpet, come out so that we made sure our staff were trained in the correct protocols, the correct equipment, and the correct chemicals used to maintain the carpet so that there aren't any risks posed from a biological standpoint. As Andrew said also, it's way cleaner. There's, you'll see slides. In fact, I'll shut up. I'll let him know.
Ready for the next one?
No, this is one of the studies that was done in Sweden where they looked at carpeting. So 40% of all flooring in the 70s was carpeting. They reduced that down to 2% in 1992, and they expected to see a decrease in childhood asthma, but it actually went up. So there was one would say it kind of made it worse because that fine particulate gets higher up in the air. And if you're a little kid, you're a little closer to the floor, so you have this lung irritants. So carpet's cleaner as long as you maintain your maintenance of your schedule vacuum. That's what it all gets down to. And German had a similar study. We talked about noise. If you've ever been in a social setting, in an institutional setting with all hard surfaces and tried to carry on a conversation with somebody who was already probably hard of hearing, you know how incredibly frustrating that can be. So carpeting helps provide some acoustical peace of mind in those areas. And there's all kinds of advantages to quieter areas, especially in the evenings. If you've ever spent the night in a nursing home, which I have, I spent a week there years ago during a study, the noise of carts and people moving around and foot traffic, it really gets to you. So having that little bit more of a quiet, it's important. My personal favorite topic, glare. This is the one thing people don't think about, but as soon as you walk into a space that has it, you immediately recognize it because you can't see. You can't see anything off of those hard, shiny floors, off the wall surfaces, off of light fixtures. So, but carpet helps take care of some of those direct and indirect glare issues that you run into in these communities. And it creates that nice home-like feel. You want to talk about money?
So, yeah, from a maintenance standpoint, again, the perception is that it's so much easier to take care of the hard floors. It is if you don't take care of them and you let the dust accumulate, which causes health risks. If you do take care of them the proper way, carpet actually is substantially more cost-effective from a maintenance standpoint. And again, we just really emphasized, I got personally involved to make sure that we got the right equipment, the right process, and the right people in to train our folks so that we're doing things the right way. I'm very process-driven. I wanted to make sure that this carpet, because it was such a change from the past, and there would be a lot of misinformation and misperceptions about it. So we knew that going into it. That's why we made sure we had everybody follow the processes that were recommended by the original equipment folks that made it. And I do want to emphasize another thing that one of the other architects brought up was, right now we've got folks double bunked. We've got folks in 72 rooms. We've got 140-ish people in 72 rooms. That's not what it's designed for long term. Right now, in the 10 months roughly that we're going to have folks in there, in an uncomfortable situation, temporary situation, we probably put the equivalent of 3 to 4 years' life, because of how congested it is and how much activity and how much abuse everything's taking in there, just given the number of folks that we've got in there in that space. Once the renovation is done and we have people, the appropriate populations, in their best care settings, a lot of this stuff will settle down because folks will be in environments that are more appropriate for their specific situations. We knew this was going to be an uncomfortable kind of a process, but the bottom line is we were able to shave off about a year of additional time needed to do the whole project, and it would have been a year of heavy disruption because we would have been moving folks in and out of wings, which would have been much more disruptive to them than to finish one whole section, move folks one time, and then go back and redo the other thing. There would have been a constant kind of musical chairs taking place. We avoided all that, but we knew that there was going to be some problems with that. That's some of what's contributing to what we got going on right now.
So in summary, wrapping up by saying that the design team and everybody at Brookside looks at options, studied precedent, went into this decision with eyes wide open, understanding that this aesthetic choice for carpet, what that means from a maintenance point of view and for an experience point of view. This is not something that was entered in lightly. There were some intense discussions on this. And this is a discussion that communities all over the country are having. So you are not alone in this discussion. Many places have carpet. Many places have sheet goods. It's It's just a matter of preference. And as long as you pick that preference and go down that track and make sure you do all the maintenance that's involved, it can be a good environment for you.
I just wanted to see, Fran, if you, I know you've been, you know, you're there every day, so if you've got comments or anything you want to say, wanted to make sure you were.
Yes, I don't think you can emphasize enough the difference in the acoustics that the carpeting has. We have had one room that we purposefully didn't carpet, and the difference between that room and the rest of the rooms is stark. And noise is a huge factor for residents as far as, you know, sleeping issues or just sleeping, period. That's a comment you can get a lot on satisfaction surveys, you know, this is too noisy in the hallway, and that the noise has really reduced. The other thing is the safety factor, and when I say safety, I really, really want to just address falls. That has been an incredible experience, that when someone does fall, and residents do fall. I mean, we're gone with the days of tying people in restraints and keeping them in chairs and not being able to move around freely, and residents do fall. Spill trips and falls are a lot of times are related to slippery surfaces, and I can't tell you how many incidents I have reviewed where a resident was getting to the bathroom, had an incontinent episode, and slipped in their own urine. And because of those, and as well as staff injuries I've reviewed a lot of those too, who have walked into a room at night or during the day, didn't know there was a spill, and boom, down they go. And when you fall on a hard tile floor that's got a cement underneath, you can do some damage. So those two factors, I'm very pleased with the results. I was one of the people who was questioning the practicality of having carpet in a nursing home. But until I did my own research, spoke with my colleagues, went to numerous other communities with it, and make sure that the staff at Brookside is following the protocol that is necessary for cleaning. Once I knew that was all in place, I'm very happy with the carpeting, and I think it's been good for the residents.
What is the life expectancy of this product? Institutional zoning.
Yeah, so I don't recall the specific, we've got that information, Supervisor Gray, but I'm going to swag it off the top of my head and then I can get you the specific, but I want to say we're figuring out a 10-year life.
That's what I would say, 10-year.
That'll ask the question that everyone else in this room wants answered. Yeah. Big two, fecal matter and vomit, how was that handled, and give us a rundown on that.
I do not have an expertise in that. However, Fran is in the room, so I will roll it over to her to talk about her specific procedures for handling fecal matter and vomit.
There's specific protocol, but because it is an impermeable, you know, there's that barrier, that it is, the fecal matter would be gathered sometimes, you know, like with a scraper into a bag that would contain it. Just like if they drop pudding or jello or mushed in their sandwich, you know, it's scraped off and then it is cleaned with a carpet cleaner and an extractor.
Yeah, I remember the first carpeting person we talked to, she brought in peanut butter and grape jelly. Again, consistency and whatever else, and smeared it, worked it in, and then there's a specific scraper, there's a specific, you never rub the carpet, you're not supposed to even do that with your carpet at home, I learned, I didn't know that. It's always dabbed because all the chemicals are designed to go down, hit that impermeable surface, and then lift the stuff up so it can be then with the extracting machine, it's all done. It's completely clean.
So in your,
I see you there.
So in your travels, in your review of this particular product, had you seen this particular product installed in institutional locations?
I know Fran went to a couple. I'm sure you've been in many.
I've seen a, I don't know if it was this specific product, but products very similar to this. There are other products in the market that have an impermeable back and the nylon yard on the top. I mean, that's becoming a standard now, that the new wave. I have seen it installed. And I've also seen the older carpet installed that had issues and was replaced with the newer carpet. So
when you had seen these newer varieties of carpets made specifically for this purpose, mm-hmm. can you say with much degree of certainty how long they've been in service? I mean, was this something that was brand new, been in service for a year or 2 years? Can you comment on how it looked to you when you'd seen it from?
I mean, I've been doing senior environments since 1999, and since then there have been in long-term care environments with carpet in them. That was about the time that it started to become more of a trend to get more home-like. This specific product, I mean, they've had non-permeable backs around for at least 10 years. 10, 15 years, I guess. But this is the latest generation of that specific item. So, and I've seen a couple communities that pop into my head, they replaced after about 10 years, they looked at other options.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's my question.
You're right at that.
Yeah, and I hold Fran and Ray in high regard. But for the purposes of honest debate, on a tour I went through Brookside, I was told that the one room that you mentioned that was not carpeted was because they had a patient that frequently was incontinent and messed on the floor. That was one point. The other point that some of the residents have told me is that when they walk through with their little walkers, and they got these little golf, what do you call it, tennis balls on the front, when you got a regular floor, it's easy to walk, but they have a lot of difficulty navigating with the carpeting with their walkers. So, you know, it's 2 points I think should be considered.
So to that point,
no, ma'am, you can't just speak.
To that point, I just want to say that there probably are some alternatives to tennis balls. I mean, that obviously is, that's something my folks had the same thing at home. We did the tennis ball thing because it's mm-hmm. what people do. But is that really the most appropriate now, given that we have a carpeted surface? Probably not. There's probably something that's manufactured specifically for walkers that has a more polished surface now that would move very easily across the floor.
Right, well.
Yeah. Number one, how often are the carpets going to be cleaned just on a regular basis?
They're vacuumed daily. I think I'd have to get back to you exactly. I think they're cleaned with the carpet cleaning equipment and extractor quarterly.
Okay, quarterly.
And then any spots are cleaned immediately.
Okay, well, my question, I guess, is this. What happens if something spills, defecation, whatever, and it's not noticed by anyone, and it sits there, compared to a tile floor? What is the ramifications from a health standpoint? Because there's a chance, my grandma lives there, I'll throw that out there, and I'm there all the time as well. So what happens, and by the way, everybody does a great job, I think, so I just want to throw that out as well, I'm very impressed. But what happens if it's not noticed and it just sits there? Is it going to stain? Is it going to cause some kind of a health risk? You, whoever can answer that.
Well, I think I'm the best person to answer, if I may, Chairman.
Yeah.
If we don't know what a spot is, if we find it in the morning and we don't know, there is a procedure for the staff to try and ascertain what the spot is by blotting it wet to wet to see what color it comes up. You know, it might be water and it still hasn't dried up. It could be coffee, soda, urine, we just don't know. And then we have the cleaning procedures. As far as a health risk, no more of a health risk than if it was found underneath the bed on a vinyl floor. In fact, we've had a lot of problems with our floor at the old Brookside in that, you know, it's whatever the product is, it's
VCT.
Vinyl tile.
It's got the squares, you know, and there's seams, and it comes up, and that I think is more dangerous if it's sitting with urine or some other, you know, product, because that actually can get in there. And I mean, we've had rooms where, frankly, they smell and you just can't get them clean because of the tile, and you just can't clean it anymore other than replace it.
But you said the rooms are vacuumed daily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisors.
Thank you. What ballpark, what percentage of resident homes have carpets over against tiles now?
So I know when I asked Mike, one of the other, the project engineer on this, on our project, I asked him how many today, what percentage are being constructed with carpet? He said it's 60 to 70% are currently of this nature, CBRFs and rehab facilities, that are being constructed with carpet. That was anecdotal, based on their experience. That's the percentage. The trend is, and that's increasing. It's an upward trend.
Well, just change the topics a little bit from the carpet. What about the issue raised earlier of the shade in the courtyard and the bars along
yes,
the front?
Yes, so yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, starting with the bathrooms. The bathrooms are. Is it okay if I stand up? I hate talking sure. With people. With people,
I like to see people when I talk. Let me just stand up.
So. When we start looking at buildings to design them, we start thinking immediately about some of the spaces that impact the residents the most, and that's the bathroom. It's true. Bathroom is one of the most used spaces that people really don't want to talk about. So at Brookside, when we looked at the bathroom, it is designed to meet ADA. That is true. However, ADA isn't necessarily in agreement with an older population, and that is unfortunate. We're actually rallying the state right now to make some changes to allow us to do things a little differently for those bathrooms. And one of the big issues is the height of the sink. And unfortunately, we met ADA, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's in agreement with the population that's using it. So that's the first issue. The swing down grab bars at the toilet, I believe that's what you were talking about, swing down grab bars. I love swing down grab bars. I would put those in my own house if I could. My wife won't let me. But the state won't let us put them in long-term care communities unless we meet the requirements of a standard ADA configuration. So the bathrooms over there have a standard bar that goes on the side and the back. And it is possible to add a swing down as a supplement also. But what we like to do is we like to design the toilet so that we move them away from the wall. We do two swing down grab bars, one on each side, so that you can have an assist from both sides. And those grab bars can be used for residents to do for themselves as long as possible, and they can maneuver around the bathroom. State won't let us do it.
The answer is no.
The answer is no. However, we can do a supplemental swing down grab bar with a standard configuration. And that's something that can be looked at as a future capital improvement project. Yeah.
Why won't the state allow you to do it? Well, what's the reasoning behind it? Would that take too long?
How much time
answer?
Do you got? Okay, so this isn't in a nutshell.
I don't understand that.
Years ago, in the early 2000s, the state of Wisconsin was seen as a really progressive force in code, building code requirements for older adults and how you design your environment. And they would give us a waiver to do something different that we know that could support the residents and support the staff and make the environment better. About 4 or 5 years ago, personally, something happened at the state. I think some legal counsel changed. I'm sorry. Something happened. And the state said, you know what? ADA is actually a federal requirement, and we have to do surveys on federal requirements. We can't give you a waiver on that. We don't have the jurisdiction to do that. We said, what do you mean? You've been doing it for 15, 20 years. So they now say there's a contradiction. So working on a project in Milwaukee at St. John's on the Lake, we have 6 variances into the state to do a bathroom that's designed to support residents and to support staff. And it's different than the ADA will allow. And it goes beyond what the ADA will allow. It's an equivalency. And the state has the ability to say you can do it. We've been denied by the Department of Health Services. They say no. So now we've gone to the state of Wisconsin. And we're hoping the state of Wisconsin can say, yes, you can make a change. If they do, then other communities can also do the same process.
That's fine.
So it's at this point, it's a hard no unless the state allows a waiver.
It's an absolute no. If we would have done it on this project, the building plans would have never made it through review. They would have got denied. Unfortunately.
Well, just the question of the shade.
Sorry. I got so excited out of the toilet room. I didn't move into the courtyard. Okay, so the courtyards.
I'm not sure which courtyards he's talking about.
The memory care one with the surrounding.
Oh, that's got a huge, what's the name of that tree?
We had a pergola going in there.
What's the name of that tree?
But it's not up now. It's not up now.
And there's also the options of tables with umbrellas. So there will be shade.
Yeah.
The tree is a little bit iffy. Because we had two trees there before that we had to take out because there were some issues with them growing. And
yeah, but this one's. So. What's the name of that tree, Dennis? I told
Don
you.
Redwood.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
The dogwood?
Dogwood.
They grow fast.
Yeah, that. There's a huge, it's probably 30 feet tall, provides natural shade.
I thought
but
we took that out.
No, no, we left it in. We were going to take it out, and we left it in because it's a gorgeous tree. It's a gorgeous specimen tree.
Okay, good.
And then we revised the landscaping to allow us to, one, repurpose the existing concrete, add a little bit to it, save some money, and now we're going to be able to add some furniture in there that will have
umbrellas.
Yeah, maybe not Cinzano umbrellas, but there'll be umbrellas.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. And the other courtyard, or the other area actually has therapeutic gardens in it. It has all kinds of natural trees as well as incredible plantings. It's a gorgeous that will also have furniture in it. We're just putting together a plan for the furniture for that area as well. So yeah, the outdoor space is definitely a part of the real benefit of the Brookside site. There's gorgeous outdoor space and we do want to make use of it as much as possible so the residents can enjoy it.
I don't allow from the audience, miss. Pardon?
You like that gentleman there?
He's a county board supervisor.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's not that I'm discriminating, but if I did that, this would not work as a meeting. Sorry.
Can I comment on the shade trees in the area outside?
That's what they said.
As far as from her standpoint, as far as anybody having a dehydration or something, has there been any reports in that respect?
No. I actually had one complaint that was not verified. We checked the medical record. We've certainly had no dehydration.
So, Andrew, Ray, do you have anything else about doing this?
That was pretty much it. Yeah, just to kind of
get. I think this is what the committee needed. And we can carry this to the, further to the county board if there's any debate needs to take place or if the committee feels any action needs to be taken this evening. I'll leave it up to you. Noel, thank you for being here, Andrew. And we'll move on.
I got a few more things to update on. Pretty much Brookside is the project itself continues to progress fairly rapidly, actually. As I indicated last time, once the schools got done with their projects around September 1st, that if you try to get in the east parking lot at Brookside, you're not going to find a place because there's all trades guys in there, and there's a lot of work going on there right now. Let's see, what else here? Furniture bid package is out right now. We're estimating that there's going to be about $450,000 worth of furniture required to finish the project. It's out for bid actually right now. Those bids are closed, I think, on 11, right at the beginning of November. That just went out. Other projects that are going on, the detention center storage building is finally starting to look like a building. If you get a chance to take a ride, what I'll call the superstructure is up as of today. The entire steel frame is up. They should start putting metal panels on possibly by the end of the week. If not, it'll be early next week. There's some work on the inside of the building that needs to take place. we're still targeting a, like a Thanksgiving completion date for that. It needs to coincide with the building that Frank's doing at the fleet maintenance building, so we can empty out the entire fleet maintenance, existing fleet maintenance building, of all those activities and get them into these two new buildings. Everybody, as far as you've heard tonight, there's just a lot of projects and a lot of stuff going on as we move into, we're taking advantage of the good weather. Dan's trying to make up some ground in golf. Clement's trying to make up some ground paving-wise. Matt's got all kinds of projects going on. Mike's finishing up. There's just all kinds of stuff. So we're real busy in public works, but I think we're winning more battles than we're losing at this point. So that's pretty much where things are at.
The Board of Trustees of Brookside are going to have the 1st November meeting. We're going to have a tour of the old section to see how the progress is at that point. So anybody on this committee wants to be there at 3 o'clock on the first Monday?
November.
You guys meet at 3:30, I think, right?
Bob's going to set it up.
Okay.
I'll talk to you about
okay. The renovations, like I say, the rooms themselves are kind of minimally refreshed, but the rest of the building, I think it'll blow most people's minds. Scott McLean, the building chief over there, he said he gets lost going into his building that he's worked for the past 20 years. It's
because it's new and exciting, not that it's confusing.
No, because it's under construction. Because okay, it's under construction. Yes. But it is. It's really the bistro, the dining areas. It's the institutional feel of kind of herding everybody into a place to have a meal is gone. It's you eat in your home. It's really a home-like setting. It's really going to be nice.
Anything else from anybody? If not, I'll ask for a motion.
Second.
Supervisor Day, second by Supervisor Gray, for adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.